I am Plante on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. David Newham joins me again. He is directing the Seven Tyrants Theatre production of Samuel Beckett's Crap's Last Tape. It stars Lyndon Banks. David and his collaborator Daniel Dirksen have won a Jesse for their independent theatre company that mounts its productions in the new studio theatre above the historic Penthouse Nightclub at 1019 Seymour Street here in town. I'll get Mr. Newham to tell us about the Beckett work, the production, the season to come, and more. David Newham was last on this past February for a previous Seven Tyrants production, of which he is a co-artistic producer, A Steady Rain. He has over 10 years' experience as a producer, director, and actor, a graduate of the University of British Columbia and Douglas College. Mr. Newham's recent directing credits include Beggar's Opera, Ebenezer, Mozart and Salieri, and Top Dog Underdog. Visit seventyrants.com for tickets. The show opens Friday, the 5th of October, and runs until the 26th of October. Please welcome back to the Plante Online program, David Newham. Mr. Newham, good morning.
Good morning, Joseph. How are you?
Pretty good yourself.
Excellent, thanks. So great to be back on the show.
It's nice to chat again. The success, I guess, of the space and the Seven Tyrants in that space has been quite good since we last chatted. Is that right?
Yeah, it seems to be. We've been really pleasantly surprised by the reaction and the reception that we've gotten, and people seem really excited about coming down and checking out the new performance venue there, and it's been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Very busy.
Yeah, and so this is the first production of the season. What have you got planned for the rest of the year, say?
Yeah, we've got a pretty exciting season outline. We're doing four fully realized professional theater productions, the first of which, of course, is Samuel Beckett's Crap's Last Tape. It's going to open in October. Our second show of the season is John Patrick Shanley's Doubt Parable, which, of course, some of the listeners might recognize not only from the play, but also there was a film made with Meryl Streep and Philip Seymour Hoffman
right.
A number of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very interesting script, and that show is going to run late November through to about mid-December. And then in March, we're presenting a new adaptation of Richard III by Kamyar Chai. And then in May, we're going to be remounting our Jesse Award-winning production from last season, Keith Huff's A Steady Rain. So we got those four productions lined up, and then we also present the space that we actually have two studios. We have our Black Box Theater, and then we also have a lounge and bar. And our lounge has its own kind of small stage, and so every Friday and Saturday night we present live entertainment. Every Friday we have a jazz show that runs from 9:30 till late, and then every Saturday we present a professional comedy, stand-up comedy show. So that's weekly entertainment that's in our lounge.
And what's motivated you and Daniel to say adapt this space above the penthouse there and turn it into a theater space and now this lounge and a bar area?
Yeah, I have to ask my psychiatrist about that one. we've been producing work for over 10 years in Vancouver, and one of the biggest expenses for an independent theater company is the space rentals. And so we spent a long time renting already established theater spaces, and they come at quite a premium. And some of the listeners might be surprised to know that it can be upwards of $4,000 to $6,000 a week just to pay rent on a theater space. And so after many years of doing that, it was last season, and when I came on your show the first time in February, we had decided to present a piece in this small space above the penthouse. And part of that was because one of our board members, Gwyn Roberts, has been a longtime supporter of our company, and he runs numerous venues around Vancouver, the Vogue Theater and the old Media Club, some people might remember.
Right.
But for the last number of years, he's run the penthouse. And we had used it as a rehearsal space. It was an unused space. We'd use it as a rehearsal space a few times over the years, and we decided to see, could we put up a show there that might be of interest to people. And so that was what kind of got the ball rolling in our minds as a potential venue. And then due to some of the success that we had, frankly, from that first production, we decided, people are pretty excited about coming into this space. The venue itself is quite an interesting history.
Yeah.
It was opened in 1947, and the building is still standing there, the original building. It's actually part of the BC Entertainment Hall of Fame. There's a little plaque outside on the sidewalk. And the old family home, the Filippone family, who still own the venue today, their original family home is next door to the nightclub. It opened in 1947. It ran through the 40s, 50s, 60s as kind of one of the hippest places in Vancouver. And, you know, at that time, a lot of major acts would come through Vancouver as part of a West Coast tour. So they'd be on their way up from Las Vegas. They'd be doing, you know, Portland, Seattle, and they'd tack on a Vancouver date. And what would often happen, they would be up here. So I'm talking about people like Sammy Davis Jr., Ella Fitzgerald, Duke Ellington, among others, and they would come through, maybe perform at the Orpheum. And at that time, a lot of, particularly the black performers, would not be allowed to stay in the hotels in Vancouver, and actually in many of the hotels in Canada. And so they'd come up to Vancouver, they'd do their show, and they'd have no place to stay. So the Filippone family would offer to put up these artists in their own home, and they would come down and stay in the home. Actually, have been in, they still have a room in the penthouse called Sammy's Bedroom, which was kind of a little bachelor suite that they offered to Sammy Davis Jr. when he was in town. And they would come and stay with the Filippone family, and then they would perform in the nightclub. And so a lot of Vancouverites would get to see these top-notch performers performing by coming down to the penthouse and enjoying that kind of entertainment. And so we're really privileged to be there, and, you know, even in our lounge, we actually have the use of the original piano from the penthouse that's been played by all of those great artists. And it's now gets put to use every Friday night as part of our jazz show. And so we feel really, as I say, really privileged, really lucky to be there, that the Filippone family have embraced what we're doing. They came down to see Steady Rain when we produced it back in February, and they loved the show. The owner told me, you know, he'd been in the space since he was a kid, of course, and he said, you know, I've seen everything done here, but we've never seen theater. And I think they were impressed by the amount of people coming out to enjoy quality live entertainment in Vancouver and was getting to see the space for the first time. I think everyone knows the penthouse, but, you know, most people at least won't admit to have been inside. but I think a lot of people are curious. And so it was giving people an opportunity to come in, experience some of the history of the space, and get to see something at the same time that's really entertaining. It is a really neat space. You know, it gets used for television and movies all the time. People are shooting inside because the interior has that quality of being from another era. A lot of people have come into our lounge, people over the summertime. We opened the lounge up in May in anticipation of the first full theater season, and a lot of people that have come through have said it reminds them of places back in time, places in New York, places in Los Angeles. There aren't a lot of spaces like it in Vancouver, so it's a very interesting place to be. And that's kind of what got our imaginations invested in the idea that, hey, you know, we could actually run this as a venue that's separate from what's now a strip club downstairs, but that gives people a taste of that old-fashioned showbiz velour that I think is exciting for people. And so our company, now that we're entering our 11th professional season, we're pretty excited to have a space that we can use that's about the right size for a company of our size. It's about 45 seats, which on most nights is about what a small independent theater company is selling in terms of tickets. So we're able to present much more work now rather than just one show a year. Right. We're able to take some of the funds that we would normally spend and invest it in a greater number of shows.
Now let's talk about the Crap's Last Tape, because this is fascinating. This is a Beckett piece that's not widely produced, and certainly not in this town. Beckett has a reputation of being challenging or inaccessible for audiences. Audiences are generally divided as to him and his work. But what's this piece about?
Well, this particular play, as you say, is very interesting. It's seldom produced. It's called Crap's Last Tape, and it's about a 69-year-old man named Crap. And every year on his birthday, he records a tape that goes over he reiterates for his own benefit in the future the events that have taken place in that year of his life. And so in the play, we see him actually reviewing some of the old tapes that he made when he was a much younger man. And I think the idea, you know, if anybody is familiar with Beckett, they'll know that it's Beckett is considered the master of the absurd. So he was, you know, one of the foremost writers of a genre of theater that includes writers like Eugene Ionesco and some of the more absurd writers, where it's not exactly what you would call realism. It was written in the mid-20th century at a time, you know, post-war period. People were questioning what life really meant in the wake of all of this death and destruction that everyone had experienced. And so it can be grim, but it can also be very funny. In our play, Crap, this 69-year-old man, as he explores the tapes that he had made as a younger man, he begins to grapple with questions about what it all meant, what his life amounted to, and whether he had lived a life worth living or not. And so the play, you know, on a deeper level, it's really about salvation and whether or not our, you know, a life is worth living. And it touches on subjects like love and human experience, relationships, and also ambition. In the case of this play, the main character is only, it's one character, it's a one-man show.
Right.
He's a writer. And so a lot of what he's exploring is the ambition that someone like a writer might have in order to pursue a career versus spending more time in life establishing relationships and finding human connection and things like love and humor and experience. So it's a story about a man that is questioning whether his life was worthwhile. It's a short play. It's about 1 hour,
mm-hmm.
And it's a one-man show, as I mentioned. So it's an experience not a lot of people have gotten to have before in Vancouver because, as you mentioned, it's not often produced. Usually people might be familiar with something like Waiting for Godot, which is one of Beckett's more well-known plays.
Yeah.
And so we felt that Crap's Last Tape, because our venue is so small, it's very intimate, that it was a good fit for us on a few levels, you know, being that, A, it's very intimate space, so you get, you know, this sense of listening to the tape really puts you in the room with the main character, with Crap, and getting to, you know, almost be a fly on the wall, almost quite literally, as he explores those tapes. And finally, the play culminates, of course, it's called Crap's Last Tape, so it culminates in the creation of his last tape, which completes this series of recordings.
Yeah. Now, it stars Lyndon Banks. You're the show's director.
That's right.
Are you guys having any discussions as you're working on this as to how it resonates, say, with your own lives? I mean, Lyndon is a guy that a lot of us might have seen in theater in this town or on television or film. You both work in the arts. I mean, is there something that say, either of you have gleaned from this piece of work about the lives that you lead, say?
Yeah, I think there is. I think that, you know, often in rehearsal, the two of us talk about the impact that the text has on us as individuals. And I think there are, you know, Beckett was, I don't think it's unfair to say Beckett was one of the greatest playwrights, if not one of the greatest writers of the 20th century. And it shows in the writing. There is a depth to it. It's a little bit, to me, it reminds me of Coleridge or Wordsworth or some of the great poets. Because there's a poetry to the writing, and what we're finding, you know, in the first, I'd say the first phase of rehearsal was just to understand what it is that's being talked about, because it can be thick, it can be dense. I think part of the work that we have to do is just bringing a certain amount of clarity to what's being said, and then, you know, realizing that the topics that the character is touching on are actually very universal. Because, you know, I mentioned some of this already, but some of the introspection into examining whether the things that he had done and said and believed were actually all worthwhile in the end, you know, that I think is something as an artist particularly that you can feel an affinity for, particularly as a theater artist. You know, you begin to wonder, like, does anyone really care? Am I doing this just for me, or is someone? Am I providing a benefit to other people that is enriching their lives? And so I do think absolutely that, you know, you begin to see the parallels between the ideas that Beckett is exploring in the piece and that the character, you know, is exploring along with your own life. I think for Lyndon, who's, you know, an older, he's about the age, I think he's a little bit younger than the character, but not by much.
Uh-huh.
So I do think that he brings a sense of depth to the role because he has lived a similar amount of years to the character and has a also worked as an artist for most of his life. And I think you can see in his performance the range of emotion that comes across, that the character explores, really being lived by the actor, because he knows what it's like to have invested 40 years into an artistic career and to then review some of those materials and ask tough questions and ask, you know, was it worthwhile? And also, you know, for Lyndon, I think, unlike the character is very much alone in life. You know, Beckett calls him crap, which, of course, I don't know, is it okay to swear on your
own? Oh, sure, yeah, absolutely.
You know, obviously a euphemism for shit.
Right.
And that you know, this man's life has turned to shit. And as I mentioned, it's not realistic, it's an absurdist piece. But the character's name is Crap, and he has become crap. And everything around him, there's not much left for him. And so I think that's maybe a place where Lyndon differs from the character, in that Lyndon has, you know, grandchildren and children and a life of people and that he loves and that love him. And I think that it brings a poignancy to it, because we begin to connect those dots and say, you know, what's really important? I mean, on the one hand, I'm an artist, but on the other hand, I have people in my life that care about me and that I care about. And so you can begin to weigh up, what would it be like if I didn't have that? What would my life be if all I had was my art and there was nobody to share my life with, nobody, you know, for whom I share their lives? So I do think that you know, there's you really begin to see the weight of what Beckett is saying shine through, and I think Lyndon does a great job of making those connections and elucidating that within the scope of the character.
Yeah. It's obviously a serious play, but there's an absurdist play, but it's also funny as well, right?
Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm. I think, you know, one of the things about Beckett that I've enjoyed, many years ago, I performed in a production of Waiting for Godot. There's a kind of a simplistic, almost childlike quality to his characters. You know, people familiar with it will know what I mean, but his characters are emblematic and also symbolic. And so, you know, oftentimes his characters are representative of what I would call a tramp, you know, a kind of a poor person who doesn't have much in their lives, doesn't have much materially in their lives, and doesn't have much in the way of human connection in their lives. And as I say, this was, I think, presented mainly as a post-war worldview that, you know, people had lost so much that he begins to question, you know, what it all meant. And so his characters often have almost a clownish quality, because they're presented as these types of lowly figures and people who are bogged down in the mire of living. And so there's of course, a darkness to that, but there is also a humor to it, because these characters have so little to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, for the audience to watch it, I think they begin to see, kind of like the way we laugh at a clown at the circus.
Right.
You know, there's a humor behind it, because we begin to see somebody who's, you know, hopefully maybe a little worse off than we are, and it allows us to, you know, begin to have an insight into our own lives and maybe laugh at ourselves a little bit as well.
This sounds like a fascinating show, and it's been a pleasure to have you on to talk about it, as well as my compliments to all of you at Seven Tyrants for creating these spaces, especially in the downtown core, for folks to get down and see theater and take in comedy and music. It's a pleasure talking again. Thanks for this.
Oh, thank you, Joseph. I really, really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us, and we hope that yourself or some of your listeners will come down and check us out one of these days.
Absolutely. Visit 7tyrants.com for tickets and information. Crap's last tape runs the 5th through the 26th of October at the Tyrant Studios, 1019 Seymour Street, above the Penthouse Nightclub. David Newham joined me on the line from here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.